And we're holding on page Ayin Zayin in Bava Basra, second to last line, middle of Ois Samach Gimel. Page Ayin Zayin, yeah.
Okay.
We started learning last time about the Levyosan. The Gemara had said that Hashem originally created a male and female Levyosan, but if they were to have relations and have children, they would destroy the whole world. In the most simple sense, the reason is, partially because they're enormous creatures, and if they had children, they would fill up the entire oceans. So we said Hashem castrated the male and killed the female, and the female sorted away for the tzaddikim, lost his lover. Then we said, we started talking about the behemoth Baharei Olaf, better known as the Shur HaBar. In our Gemara over here, it doesn't really talk about it as the Shur HaBar so much. It uses the expression behemoth, which comes from the Pesukim in Eov. I think Gemara is going to be dashing on the subject. The more familiar name Shur HaBar comes from the Medrash on Chumash VaYikra in Parshas Shmini. Anyway, we said the same thing. There was a male and a female, and the same thing. Hashem also castrated the male, and this time instead by the behemoth, the Gemara had said that Hashem cooled off the taiva of the female. Instead of killing her and saving for the tzaddik and lost lover, he just cooled off her taiva so she won't have the feeling and the need for having relations with her mate. But this way also they're not having children, and lost lover, her flesh will be served to the tzaddikim. So what is all this? So we started talking about last time, there's a lot of different explanations among Rishonim and Achronim. Are we talking about a gashmius tikkasuda over here that's going to be fed to the tzaddikim? Are we talking about a ruchnius tikka concept? So there's a long hakosev over here that brings a long explanation from the Rashba that starts explaining, you know, there's, for example, a mitzvah to eat kodshin. We find the Nevi'im had to be in a physically good mood, for example, with music, in order to be able to have nevuah. So there is definitely room to say that we are talking about a gashmiyistic meal that the tzaddikim are going to have. Lasid lovei. But again, Marshall also makes a point that these creatures, the Leviathan and the Behemoths we're talking about over here, are the most refined of all the gashmiyistic creatures, and therefore their meat, their flesh, is going to be the ultimate suda for the tzaddikim before we have a point where nen and mizivah shechina and no physical food b'chalal is needed. Anyway, so the Rashba also goes on and brings a long explanation about the symbolism of the male and the female and the male being castrated and the female being salted or cooled off, as the case may be. So he explains like this. With the Levyosan, what we're talking about is the neshama versus the seichel. So you have, in other words, the fish, the Levyosan, that are created, male and female, and they're called Levyosan. He says, Meloshan lover, after our time, you love it, they're connected to the body. But the body has a seichel and it has a neshama. So now the question is like this: we use the word nefesh, which means a person's physical chayis. So the nefesh, maybe in terms of chassidus, we'd be talking about the nefesh of a hamas. Why is it not in complete connection and in sync with the seichel? And the reason is, if it was, then, for example, a person would have no taiva for gashmius at all. A person wouldn't marry, a person wouldn't have children. We find by Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, he's separated from his wife. We find by Ben Azai, he says, Nafshi choshka b'tora, my soul yearns for Tora so much that I can't marry and have a normal family life. And he gives a few other examples like that. So therefore, in other words, if the seichel was constantly in sync with the nefesh and always connected, then a person wouldn't be able to, that person wouldn't live a normal life. So therefore, in token of that, then we're saying that Hashem castrated the male and killed the female, meaning, in other words, that the nefesh, which is represented over here by the female, it will continue to exist. It will be around in the time of Tchias HaMesim and Olam HaBa. But right now, there's a disconnect between them, which is why we have that a person has a nefesh, and a person has a nefesh of Bahamas, and a person has a life and taivis and whatever, and they're not always in sync with the seichel. So that's represented by this disconnect that Hashem made between them. And he goes on to explain various details about it. Then he goes on to say the behemoths, meanwhile, also the male and the female, were representing with that then the guf itself. So we're saying that you have, so the goof itself, same kind of thing. If you had that, if you had the goof and the neshama, that is to say, if they were completely connected, what he calls the chomer and the surah, the physicality of the body and the ideal of what a person is supposed to be. If those were in complete sync, then what you'd have is nobody would ever, people would never die. There would never be room for the next generation, etc. That's also what the Gemara means by machrivenes kol olam koloi. So that, again, the Eidish made that the person's for the person's chomer, the physicality of the body, is not completely in sync with the tzura, with the ideal of what a person should be. And the result is bodies eventually get old and decay and die and so on and so forth, and that's represented in the Gemara over here, says the Rashba, by what the Gemara is saying, that Hashem kept the male and female apart, and that one of them is that both of them are deprived of the ability to have children, but they're both still salted away and available. In the case of the fish, salted away, and in the case of the behemoth, kept alive in order to serve to tzaddikim la'asid lavei, because la'asid lavei they will have the complete neshama, the nefesh on its highest level will come to Olam Haba, will come to Gan Eden, and similarly the body at its peak will also be present at that time. Chias amazing. So the Gemara continues. So the second line from the bottom on Ein Zayin, page Ein Zayin. So the Gemara asks, with the Leviosin, we're saying that Hashem killed the female. Why is it that Hashem had to kill it? Instead of, by the behemoth, we're saying that Hashem didn't kill the female, he just took away her taiva for having relations. And the answer is, dogin prisi. The answer is, fish are much more promiscuous than that. Even taking away the taiva wouldn't prevent her and her mate, the male Leviosin, from having relations. Therefore, with her, the only alternative is to kill them. In terms of the mashal, the Rashba talks about not every detail of the mashal maybe has to exactly match the nimshal. Once the Gemara is using the metaphor of fish and male and female to represent, as he says, the seichel and the nefesh, then in terms of the way the mashal itself is phrased, then yeah, when you talk about fish, that cooling off its taiva is not enough. But the Gemara asks for the evet ipcha. Fine, why not do the other way around? Why is it that the female had to be killed and saved la'asid lavei, and the male kept alive? Why not the other way around? So the answer is he buries him a malcha de nukvas sa'aviv. One answer in the cave of malcha ma'alya is the wording in the printed Gemara, is that female fish is tastes better when it's salted. So somehow Shaw says there's two ways we could understand that. It can mean that therefore it's better to kill it and salt it away, or it can mean that's why Dafka the female rather than the male. Or another answer, since the Pasuk tells us that Hashem created the Leviosin to play with it, and as we learned last time, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us that there's a certain period of the day, every day, when Hashem, so to speak, plays with the Leviosin. We talked about a Maimon in Lakut HaTorah, where the Alter Rebbe talks about that the Leviosin also represents the very high-level tzaddikim, the ones from Almadei Skassia, and Hashem plays with them, so to speak, as in enjoys their Avodah. But still, the Pasuk phrases it in terms of Hashem playing with the Leviosin as though it was a pet. So, Bahadin Akeval, Ab Urach Ara, it wouldn't be Derech Eretzif to express that about the female. As much as Hashem, of course, is beyond any gender, but still, we usually picture Hashem as male, and therefore it wouldn't be proper to talk about him playing with a female creature. So that's another reason why it had to be the male that's left alive, and that's the one that Hashem, so to speak, plays with.
They're called the same name,
though,
male and female,
the Yosem. So they're called the same name. Maharsha points out, by the way, that since the Pasuk says Tan Nin, so therefore, so Maharsha points out the Nun is usually the marker of the feminine. You usually have, and when it comes to verbs, Mem is for males, Nun for females. So that's one reason why the Gemara says when the Gemara had quoted before the Pasuk, Vahorag Tan Nin Asher Bayam, then the Gemara understands that means the female one. But yeah, as far as the actual name of Leviosin, the Pashtus is the same for both, yeah.
Leviosin,
no, it's not called Leviosin, I guess not, no. So the Rashi also points out, you know, that also when we talk about sorting, it represents the idea that after all, you have, there's a type of nefesh. The Rishoyim, after all, have a nefesh of Rishoyim, which is not going to be sorted away for the future because it's going to be destroyed. The nefesh of Ahamis, of them, what happens to it, it gets destroyed. There's nothing of it left. So therefore, so we can talk more, that when we talk about sort, so therefore we use the expression sorting, suggesting something that Tata has worth as being preserved, namely that it's going to be the nefesh of the tzaddikim, which is going to be very lost and lovely. And he goes on to say that since we're saying that the seichel is represented by the male and the nefesh is represented by the female, and we're saying that it's, so to speak, that Hashem plays with it. So in other words, the reason why it's called Levyasin, again, is because Meloshin Yolava Ishi Eli, it's connected Lamaila, so therefore it's not really proper to speak about it in feminine terms. So therefore, the one that's connected Lamaila, we talk more about the male one. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Hocha Nami Lim L'chol N'keva, why is it by the behemoth, though, we're saying that it's the female one is not salted, is not killed and salted, but just set aside for the tzaddikim lost in love. The expression in the Gemara before was the tzinin and hakeva, that Hashem called off the taiva of the nekeva, the shomra, and preserved it, apparently alive, for the tzaddikim lost in love. Why? Why not also salt it? The answer is kavram malicha mali, bistra malicha loy mali. Salted fish is very good to eat. Salted meat, salted beef, is not as good as flesh. So therefore, in terms of the mushroom, when we're talking about what has to be preserved for the tzaddikim lost in love, then the mushroom fits better if you talk about fish being salted away and animal flesh being available like fresh, because then it tastes better. So the Gemara continues. More on this topic of the seas and the creatures in the seas and all that. When Hashem was getting ready to create the world, he tells the Malach of the sea, "Psach picha, open up your mouth, and swallow up all the water in the world, so that the dry land will be visible." But up to that point, the water was covering the whole earth. So now the Eibishter tells this Malach, swallow up all the water and make room for dry land. Almost the fun of it, the Sar Shoyam objects. Now, Marashor says the Sar Shoyam may not just be a Malach, it may mean a large creature. It may be the Leviathan that we were just talking about. So we'll get into that in a minute. Almost the fun of, so the Malach or the Leviathan or whatever it is, the Sar Shoyam says, Rebbeinu Shalom, Daish Emud B'Shali. Isn't it enough that I should stay with what I have? In other words, as it is, there's always water flowing from the rivers into the ocean, and the Sar Shoyam always has to be swallowing up that water so that the oceans themselves don't overflood. This is, in other words, this is the Gemara's way of expressing the point that the water evaporates and you have a water cycle, so the Sar Shoyam is saying, in other words, I'm already busy with that. I can't also swallow up all the world. Miyad Boatboy, right away, Hashem kicked that creature, the Malach or the Leviathan or whatever, Vahorgoy, and killed it. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "V'choychei roga yom," with Hashem with His power broke the sea. Rashbam points out that the word roga comes from a word that means to break. Ovisvunase, and with Hashem's understanding, mochatz rohav, he struck and killed Rohav. So what is Rahav? Amar Bitzchak, Shlamina Sar Shoyam Rahav Shmoy. You see from that that the Sar Shoyam's name is Rahav. And he continues, real molly. So far, what does this mean? So Marashor says the Sar Shoyam over here may well mean the Leviathan that we were talking about. Now, Bederech HaTeva, the water would be covering the earth. In Rambam, in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, he talks about the four Yesodos and water being lighter than earth floats above the earth. So Bederech HaTeva, the water would have covered the whole earth. In fact, there are even Mephoshim, we talk about them. Malbim talks about this, there are other Mephoshim talk about as well, that the Malbim, for example, has a whole interesting explanation that originally the water had a lot more air mixed into it. It was almost, I guess the way he's describing it, it almost sounds like it was a carbonated drink or something, so it would take up a lot more room than just water by itself. And now the Eibishter is telling him, "Black ol mamis shuba olam, swallow all the water," and it would shrink down the water and make it like water that we're familiar with, which will take up less volume, and therefore there's room for the dry land. So now, in other words, Hashem, so Maharsha goes, so going back to Maharsha, he says Hashem needs to be mevatel that teva, that water should naturally cover the earth, and Hashem is going to be mevatel that to make room for dry land, which is where people are going to live. So he tells him, be mevatel, you are going to be my shliach, to be mevatel that teva, to compress the water into the seabed. So when he says dai shem b'shali, I mean, no, the way that with the nature that Hashem that you implanted in water is good enough for me. I don't need to go and change that. So Hashem personally, so to speak, was mevatel that teva and used his direct word by yomer elikim, kovu amayim, said oh hayabasha. And Hashem, so to speak, personally did that then, that all the water was going to be in the oceans and not covering the earth. Why didn't he do the Hatzilah? Because he wanted to, I guess, that it should work through Teva, the Teva itself, that the Ebershter created in the water. Now he wants that, now he's going to make that Koyach HaTeva itself do something different, and it didn't, so therefore Hashem does it himself. You know, you find in connection with Ma'aseh Bereishis, you find several other things where it talks about that Hashem gave a command such and such, and the creatures disobeyed. Another example of it is, you know, it talks about that Hashem wanted that the trees should have wood that tastes the same as the fruit, and the earth disobeyed. That tells the earth ate pri, Hashem wanted ate pri, it's ate oisa pri, and therefore later on the ground was cursed. What that means exactly, I mean, it's not like any Nivra has the ability to actually defy the Eibushter. That's a whole question in itself. But whatever it means, in other words, Eibushter, so to speak, had a certain plan of how things should be, and the Poel Hashem made it differently. What?
By the Levana.
By the Levana is another example, yeah? Yeah. Now, the word Rahav, Marsha goes on to point out, is in the context of the pasuk of Svanosim Mochat Rahav, is actually not referring to Hashem killing the Sar Shel Yam at all, rather, it refers to Hashem punishing and destroying the Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim in a number of places in Tanakh are called Rahav because the basic meaning of the word Rahav means proud. And the Mitzrayim were always a very proud and gaivadik nation. But now Maharsha is saying when the Sar Shel Yam answers Daivi She'em and Mishali, then that itself is so that seems the opposite of Gaiva. That almost sounds like a novel, like I'm not capable of doing what you want. So therefore the Gemara is understanding that Rahab is not a descriptive term, it's actually the Sar Shel Yam's name. Now, so the Gemara continues. So now you have this dead Rahab over there. The Umali Mayim Machasimoise. Now if it weren't for the water covering his body, his dead body, ain't kobriya yecholalamim mitnei reichoi. Nobody would be able to withstand the odor. It's lying there dead, and it would rot and smell bad. Especially Maharsha points out, if we're talking about the Leviathan, it's an enormous creature, and it wasn't salted away like the Leviathan we said before. So here, in the water, It doesn't spoil only the fact that it's in the water protects us from the smell. Shenemar, as Yeshaya says, lo yoreyu v'lo yashchisu b'chol ha'kodshi. In Mashiach's times, the wild animals, or Rambam talks about that it's also a metaphor for the umas ha'olam, whatever. They won't cause harm and they won't destroy in my entire holy mountain of Eretz Yisrael. Ki mala earth deya es Hashem, because the world will be full of knowledge of Hashem. Kamayim layom machasim. Like the water covers the sea. Now, what do you mean covers the sea? The sea itself is the water. Therefore, we have to understand the pasuk like the water covers the Sar Shel Yam, the dead body of the Sar Shel Yam. That now it's covered by that water, and therefore we don't smell it. So in other words, Rashbam and Maharsha point out the word Yam itself, I mean, could conceivably mean the seabed, but the Gemara prefers to understand that it means the actual sea itself, and therefore Layam Machas, it means that it's covering the Sar Shel Yam.
So,
what?
You say,
particularly, yeah, Altikri usually change one word. Here, you're not changing the word, you're sticking in a word, that's true. You're adding a word, yeah? I mean, I guess you could say, you know, especially if we're talking about the Malach of the Yam, you know, many times we have where it's, it talks about Hashem talking to some creature and it answering, and many times before Hashem explained that it means the Malach of that creature. We have when it comes to the mountains coming and vying among themselves which one the Torah is going to be given on. You have a lot of other examples like that. So therefore, it's almost like on the contrary, not really an Al Tikri, but rather the Gemara is telling us that the essence of what the Yam is really the Sarasho Yam, except in this case, it's den. So again, one meaning of it is that Pashat the Gemara is describing over here how the nature of water used to be different. It was more carbonated, or it was more expansive, or whatever. And now Hashem shrunk it down and made it take up exactly the space on the world that it needs to, and no more. Hamakosid brings over here that it also hints at the type of chokhmah, the pnimiyas haTorah, which is hidden from everybody's understanding until la'asid lavay, and symbolically, therefore, it includes all the water in the world. So right now, so far we've been talking mostly about the Levyasim. Soon the Gemara is going to talk more about the Sher Abar. But a little bit. I mean, for the most part, this Gemara. No, so not really. Actually, they're a little bit, but for the most part, the Gemara is focusing over here on the Levyasim. Say what?
Giving so much attention.
Not giving so much attention. And like I said, in this Gemara, it's not even calling it by the name Sher Abar. The name Sher Abar comes from the Medrash Rabbah and in Parsha Shmini. Here, the Gemara is mentioning it a little bit, but when it does, it's calling it Behemoth. Behemoth Baharei Olaf, as we learned last time, because as Rashbam says, it's such a giant creature that every day it needs the grass of a thousand mountains in order to eat.
Rahab is the same letters as Abor.
Has Abor, interesting. Okay. Rahab and Abor, could be. I don't know. Onward. So now the Gemara is going to bring up something else in connection with the Levyos and having to do with the waterways around Eretz Yisrael. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Rab, Yarden Yotzim Ma'oras Pamyas. The Yarden comes out of the cave of Pamyas. So the main source of the Yarden is a cave in the north of Eretz Yisrael in a place called Panyas. So you go nowadays to the place is called Banyas because the Arabs over there they don't know how to pronounce a pay sound. They don't have it in their language, so they turn a pay into a bay. They turn a bays into a pay into a bays. But you go there. It's a nice park actually. They have a lot of streams over there, and so there's one particular one that comes out from a cave called Ma'oras Pamyas, and the Gemara is saying that's the source of the Yarden in the sense of like the most distant source. Tani Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Yarden Yotzim Ma'oras Pamyas. The Yarden comes out of this cave of Pamyas, or Mahalach B'Yamashol Sivchi. It passes through the Sea of Sivchi. The Sea of Sivchi, in later times, is called Lake Chola. It's a lake north of the Kinneret. It used to be a decent sized lake, much smaller than the Kinneret, but still a respectable sized lake. There was a big problem in the early years of the State of Israel. There was a big problem with malaria in the area. They drained the whole thing and turned it into farmland. Eventually, they found that harmed the local ecology, so nowadays they reflooded part of it. So they have a little lake over there, much smaller than the original, and most of that area is farmland. Anyway, that's the Yamashol Sivchi, so the Yarden passes through that. Over Yamashol Tveria, through the Sea of Tveria, which is the Kinneret. Then it flows down from there and comes down. And then it flows down until the Yamagodol. Now, in the Gemara in Bechoris says it a little differently. It says with a little more detail that first it goes to Yamashal Sdoin, which is the Dead Sea. And then from there, the Gemara says over there it goes to the Yamagodol, which is very hard to understand because there is no outlet from the Dead Sea to the Mediterranean. Usually Yamagodol means the Mediterranean, but there is no outlet from the Dead Sea to anywhere. So there's a lot of different possibilities what the Gemara means by that. First of all, the Rashba says symbolically that the Gemara is talking about over here about basically about the Seder Hishtalshalus of a person's neshama, how it comes down from level to level, from Ma'oras Pamyas into Yamashot Tveria, and so on and so forth, and the Chachamim are using that as a moshul, the Rashba says over here, for the original source of the neshama, in the highest olamos, and it goes down, 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 and through the various levels, down, down into us. As far as the actual geography of it, what does the Gemara mean that it goes to the Yamagado? So there's a few different possibilities. It may be referring to underground channels through which it connects to there are wadis over there in the south of Eretz Yisrael that it connects to one of them, and then one of them connects to another one, which eventually can lead to the Mediterranean. There can be the idea that especially maybe before Hashem destroyed Sidon and the other cities over there, the actual land there was higher, and it actually did flow down, and there actually was a channel that went from that sea to the Mediterranean or to the Persian Gulf, and there's a number of other possibilities that have been brought up. Anyway, almost Galgova Yoda, then it continues flowing down from there, Ad Shemagila Pivsha Levyosin, until it reaches the mouth of the Levyosin. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Yivtach, he is certain. Ki yagiach yarden opihu, when the yarden flows into his mouth. So we see that the yarden is flowing into the mouth of the Levyosin. And again, the Rashba says, symbolically, going with what he said before about the Levyosin, referring to the respective male and female Levyosin, referring to the seichel and the nefesh, so it represents, in other words, that ultimately the neshama and the seichel come down from level to level, down to the Yamagodol, the great sea into which all rivers flow, and then from there it goes to the Yamagodol, and then from there it goes to the Levyosin, meaning that it becomes, in a person, a nefesh chaya, it becomes the gashmiistika nefesh that keeps a person alive, that makes the body function and allows the seichel to work within it. So the Gemara says maskif for Rav Ba'ula, but Rav Ba'ula says, what are you talking about? You're saying that it means that the pasuk is telling you that the yarden flows into the Levyosin's mouth. Hai bebehemus beharei olaf ksiv. That pasuk yivtach ki yagiach yarden apihu is an Eov. It's referring to the behemus. You have a whole series of psukim over there where Hashem is talking to Eov and telling him about the giant great creatures that he created. So you have many psukim over there back to back that talk about the behemus. Hinino behemus asher asisi. And then the Gemara had quoted before some psukim about it, and then it says that this creature Yivtach, he's certain, he's very confident, ki yagiach yaudin opihu, when the yaudin is flowing into his mouth. So the behemoth is not the Levyosin. Elo Omar Rav Ba'ula. So Rav Ba'ula explains, you're right, the pasuk is not actually saying that it goes into the mouth of, but the pasuk is saying that it goes into the mouth of Levyosin. Meaning, when it says, you have to understand that the Yivtach and Pihu are referring to two different creatures. Amosai Behemus Beharei Olaf Betuchus. When can the Behemus Beharei Olaf be confident that it's going to stay alive? Vishah or Bizman Shemagiach Yarden Lepiv Shal Levyosin. As long as the Yarden is flowing into the mouth of Levyosin, meaning that the two of them are tied together. As long as the Levyosin is alive, the Behemus / Shur Habur will also be alive, because as we're going to talk about soon, eventually there's going to be a fight. There's going to be a fight to the death between them. So therefore, Yivtach, he, the Behemus, can be certain, can be confident that he's still going to be alive. Why? Because ki yogiach yarden opihu, as long as he knows that the yarden is flowing into his, the Levyosin's mouth, then the Behemus knows that he's safe as well. As opposed to, Marshall Titus out, you know, that when you get to the point, as the Medrash tells us about the fight between them, when the behemoth is going to stab the Levyosin with its horns, and the Levyosin is going to shech the Shur Habur with its fins, so then they're not so certain, they're not so confident anymore, because then they're going to end up getting shechted and killed. Speaking of the Yarden, the Gemara says, and the lakes that it flows through, Akosif points out another meaning of it as well. One of the many meanings of the Levyosin, we talked about it before, Mephoshim explained, one of the many symbolisms of the Levyosin, and of the male and the female, is the Goyish nations that we have to contend with in Golos. And the male, one way of explaining also, when we said before, that Hashem keeps the male and female Levyosin apart, because otherwise they destroy the whole world. One meaning of it, Akosif brought earlier, that it refers to Edom and Yishmael, the Western nations and the Muslim nations, respectively. So therefore, So one of the meanings of it is Hashem makes sure that the two of them are always at loggerheads, as we have now in the headlines, you know, that you never have that they get along, because otherwise, Taka, there would be Machrevis Kolo Elam Kolo. Well, then, in token of that, then also, so... Uh, So it means as long as the Jewish people are in Golus Eden, then no other nation fears that they're going to go extinct, because they're going to all be dealt with only L'moisa Mashiach. So as long as the Leviathan keeps on getting his water representing Malchus Eden, then everybody else knows they're safe as well. So the Gemara says, speaking of the Yarden and the river and the waterways around Eretz Yisrael, ki osir of dimi omer Rav Yonason or Rav Yochanan my dichtiv. By the way, Tosfos brings from a medrash that says that actually the Yarden flows through the Kinneret and doesn't mix with it. So there's the water that came originally from Aras Pamias gets through without getting mixed up with the water in the Kinneret and winds up in the Yarden and eventually winds up in the Leviathan's mouth. So ki osir of dimi omen of Yochanan or Yonason my dichtiv. What does it mean the pasuk ki hu al yamin v'sada? Hashem founded Eretz Yisrael on seas, Val Nahoris Yechonineha, and he established it on rivers. So what do you mean? So what are these seas and rivers? Eru Sheva Yamin Va'Avra Nahoris Shemakifin Es Eretz Yisrael. This refers to seven seas and four rivers which surround Eretz Yisrael. The Elohim Sheva Yamin, the seven seas, are as follows. One way of looking at it is, you know, in the world at large, depending on how you count the oceans, one way of counting it is there are seven oceans. You have the various parts of the Atlantic and the Pacific, the Indian, etc. So therefore, Eretz Yisrael being a microcosm of the whole world, therefore it has to have seven seas surrounding it as well. And the same way as you have four main rivers in the world, they're the four rivers that come from Gan Eden, the same way you have to have four rivers in Eretz Yisrael. So the Elohim Sheva Yamin, Yamashal Tveria, first of all is the Kinneret, the Yamashal Sidoim, the Dead Sea, the Yamashal Chelas, the Sea of Chelas, which one there's a sefer on the geography of Eretz Yisrael written about 200 years ago called Tavur Saaretz. He explained Yamashal Chelas, Chelas over here is really Elas, as in Elat. So it means the Gulf of Aqaba. When you go to Elat over there and you go to the beaches, that would be Yamashal Chelas. Next is the Yamashal Chilsa, then the Sea of Chilsa, which he says is a little lake in the Golan Heights. The Yamashal Sivchi, the Sea of Sivchi, which would be the one that we mentioned before, the Chola, the Lake Chola. And the last one, the sixth one is the Yamaspamia. The next one is the Sea of Aspamia. Now Aspamia usually means Spain, but it doesn't really fit over here because we're talking about the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Mind you, there is a Gemara in Gittin where Rabbi Yehuda has an opinion that the borders of Eretz Yisrael extend directly due west from the northwestern and the southwestern corners of Eretz Yisrael. And according to him, actually, the borders of Eretz Yisrael, as far as the halachas of Gittin and other and mitzvahs applies to Eretz, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the borders of Eretz Yisrael include a substantial part of the Mediterranean. But the halacha is not like him anyway. The halacha just includes a line running more or less parallel to the coast that includes some islands there or whatever. Anyway, so towards the Oretz explains that over here the word Aspamia is really Apamia, which is a town in Syria, which is one of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. When you have in the borders of Eretz Yisrael that are listed in Parshas Maaseh, there's a town there called Shvam, the Yeridagvum Shvam HaRivla, and one identification of Shvam is with that town of Pamia. So then there's a lake. There was a lake over there, and that would be what the Gemara is referring to over here. And the last one, the Yamagadol in the Mediterranean. So those are the seven seas. The Elah and Abanahoris, the four rivers, Yarden, the Yarmuch. The Yarmuch runs into the Yarden at the southern end of the Golan Heights. The Cumion or Puga, and the other two are Cumion and Puga, which the Oruch identifies those as the two rivers that are on either side of Damascus. And then in the Pasuk, in the story of Naaman and Malachim Beis, he calls them Amona and Parpar, and then the Oruch says that's the two rivers that we're mentioning over here, the Cumion and the Puga. So Eretz Yisrael is surrounded by various waterways. And Ion Yaakov points out the symbolism of it is also that you need a pure place for Ashras Ashkina. In order for Nevi'im to be able to have Nevu'ah, they have to be in a place of Tahara. We find, for example, it says about Yechezkel that he got his Nevu'ah on the Be'eretz Kastim on the Har Kvar. Why that? By the river Kvar? Because a river is a place of Tahara. You can tovel in it. Therefore, in token of that, because Eretz Yisrael is the main place of Ashras Ashkina and Nevu'ah, therefore it has to be surrounded by various bodies of water. Um, So, next. What? So the four rivers are the Yarden and the Yarmuch, which is a large tributary of the Yarden that runs at the southern end of the Golan Heights. The Kirmien and the Puga, or Piga, whatever. The Oruch says that those are the two rivers that are on either side that are near Damascus. And then in Melachim, you have when Naaman has Tzaras, and the Arami general, and he goes to Elisha to cure him, and Elisha tells him, go dip seven times in the Yarden, and Naaman gets annoyed, and he says, what do I need that for? If it's a matter of dipping in rivers, I've already dipped in the Amona and the Parpar, the two rivers near Damascus, which is my hometown, and nothing helped. What makes him think that the Yarden is going to be any better, and the whole story develops from there. So the Aruch says that the Kirion and the Puga are two names, are those rivers. Getting back to the Leviathan, the Gemara says, Ki osid of Dimi Omer Rabbi Yonasan, osid Gavriel lasik knigya im Leviathan. In the future, Osid Lavoi, Gavriel is going to be making a hunt for the Leviathan. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, here now, the Gemara is going to be quoting a whole bunch of psukim from Eiv, again, where Hashem is telling Eiv, I created the Leviathan, I created the behemoth, and you have no ability to control, you have no ability to create such creatures, you have no ability to control such creatures, so I run the world, and you don't always understand what I'm doing. So the Gemara is going to be quoting a bunch of psukim from Hashem's descriptions of those animals to talk about the characteristics of Leviathan. So here, Shenema, the pasuk says, Hashem tells Eve, Timshech Leviathan b'chaka. Would you be able to pull in the Leviathan using a hook, using a fish hook? Over Chebel Tashtia l'shoinoi, would you be able to sink down his tongue using a rope? Like a harpoon or something, implying you, a boss of a dumb, can't, but someone higher than a boss of a dumb, such as a malach, could. So therefore, that shows that Gavriel is going to do that. The umole akodesh bochu oizrei, but if Hashem did not help Gavriel with that hunt, any yocholoi, even Gavriel wouldn't be able to overpower Leviathan. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, ha oisa yagesh charbei, the one who made him will bring close his sword. Now that pasuk, Rashbam points out, is talking about the behemoth. So therefore it means Hashem will bring his sword close to kill the behemoth, and also though the same thing is true of the Leviathan. So Maharsha teaches out, in other words, when it comes to the respective power, we can say that the Leviathan is a much greater and bigger creature than the behemoths, than the Shurabar, and therefore we can say that the Gavriel might not be able to overpower the Leviathan by himself, but he would be able to do so to the behemoths. But in fact, Maharsha pointed out earlier, I hadn't mentioned it, but Maharsha points out, you know, you look in Maaseh Bereishis, it doesn't mention Hashem creating any specific animal or anything like that. It says in general, Hashem created the animals, Hashem created the fish, Hashem created the birds. The only creature that's singled out by name that Hashem created, by Yibra Elikim Asataninim Agdolim, which the Gemara had said earlier, refers to Leviathan. So like, Leviathan is far bigger and more powerful than any other Nivra among the animals. So therefore, so we can say that Gavriel wouldn't have the ability to overpower that. So therefore, the Gemara is not bothered by the fact that this pasuk is referring to the behemoth, because it means that Hashem uses his sword to dispatch the behemoth, and all the more so the Leviathan, because even Gabriel wouldn't be capable of that. Then Maharsha points out also, you know, what about the famous thing about them dueling with each other? Again, you know, the behemoth using its horns against the Leviathan, and the Leviathan using its fins against the behemoth. Fine, Maharsha says, those themselves are, when we say, Hashem will bring close his sword, that means that's the sword itself. Hashem uses the Leviathan and the Shurabar as his respective swords to kill the respective creatures. So that also works out nicely then why it is that the pasuk on the face of it is referring to the behemoth, and really the Gemara is saying it refers to the Leviathan as well, because in fact it's going to be between the two of them. So as far as the symbolism of it, so the Rashba explains that it means, again, since we're saying that the Leviathan represents the Seichel and Nefesh of Bahamas, and the Behemoth represents the Gashmias of the body, so there comes a point when eventually all of this is going to be over. There's going to come a time when there's a whole new world. So therefore, Gavriel coming and fighting with him represents that at that point, that Teva that we're familiar with is going to become Bottle. And Midas, Gavriel is always the representative of Midas Adin. So it means, in other words, therefore, so the Gemara is talking about that Hashem will use his Midas Adin to transform the world into a whole different kind of thing. But therefore, so that's what it means. But again, Molei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Ozer, it's not only the Midas Hadin, it's ultimately it's Hashem's Rotzen that's all behind it that makes it that that makes it that this is going to happen. Hosev again talking about the idea that Leviathan represents the Umas Olam and particularly Edom, so it means there's going to come the point when Gavriel is going to go and fight against them, and Hashem is going to kill the Sarishal Esav, etc. So it all fits with that. He also of Dimi Omer of Yonason or of Yochanan. Let's talk about more characteristics of the Leviathan. The Shasha Leviathan Roiv, when the Leviathan is hungry, Motzi Hevel Mipiv, he gives out hot breath from his mouth, Umartiach Komemus Shubimitsula, and he causes all of the water in the depths to bubble. Marshall points out, Yartiach usually means to make it hot. Here it doesn't mean to make it hot, it just means to make it bubble. So Shenemar, as the pasuk says, those pasukim niyev yotiach kasir mitzula. He makes the depths bubble like a pot. V'omoli machnis roish of the Gan Eden. But then if the Leviathan did not stick his head into Gan Eden, ain kovriya yichol lamed berechay. No creature would be able to withstand his smell because Rashbam points out it's very hot and it gives off this foul breath. So it would give off a tremendous odor if it weren't for the fact that his head goes into Gan Eden and the sweetness of Gan Eden moderates what he's doing. Shenemar, as that same pasuk continues in Iyov, Yom Yosim Kamerkocha, he makes the sea like a merkocha. Now, the simple meaning of merkocha means something that's stirred up, like having this week's parasha, Roikach Maser Rekeach, where Rashi explains that Rekeach means to mix things together thoroughly. So in Parshat Trat, it means he mixes up the seas thoroughly, but the Gemara is also explaining merkocha means like that, like Roikach Merkachas means a spice maker of So it means Hashem makes the sea instead into a mixture of spices because he brings in the fragrance of Gan Eden. And when the Leviathan is thirsty, and he makes furrows upon furrows in the sea because he drinks up so much of the water that you have there an area where for a moment the water has disappeared from that area and it looks like a plowed furrow. Shenemar, as the next pasuk continues, there in Iyov, Achrav Yoir Nosiv. After him, when he's passed, Yoir, there's visible, there shines, Nosiv, a path. So it makes it look like you can see the path where he just went through, and you can see that, he drank the water over there. Marsha points out the word Yoir is also related to a word. The word Ur means, among other things, it means a valley or it means a hole. Urah Sifoni, for example, means the hole, the crevice in which a snake lives. Rashi brings an Ur Kastim. That one meaning of Ur Kastim means the valley or the cleft of Kastim. So the same way over here means like it makes clefts in the sea. After the Leviathan has passed through an area, it takes 70 years for the depths to regain their strength because so much water was taken out of it that it takes 70 years for it to completely refill. Shenemar, as that same pasuk continues, that begins Achra of Yoir Nosiv, continues Yachshav Tahoim Loseva, he'll consider the Tahoim, the depths of the sea, will be like old age. The Poshet Pshat and Farshim say it means, in other words, the water foams over there and white, like white hair on an old person. But here, the Gemara's understanding, it means as far as the age. The Ein Seva, Pusim, the Shivim Shana, the word Seva means no less than 70 years. Marsha points out, why is the Gemara bringing in all of this information? It's more important for us to know on the face of it that the Leviathan is going to be the Suda for the Tzadikim Lasid Lavoi. Why is it so important for us to know these details about how he stirs up the oceans and it takes 70 years, etc.? Rashbam had explained at the beginning of this whole Sugya of Agadah that one reason for all of these stories, of Rav Baba Hana's stories and the various other things that we've been talking about to this point, is to show the greatness of the Eivishter and his creations. Mor Rabo Masach Hashem. Here, a human being, Bederach Klal, lives only about 70 years. And here you have, in one gulp, the Leviathan makes such an impact on the sea that it takes 70 years to be regained. And nevertheless, what was the Leviathan created for? For the human beings, for the tzaddikim, as a sort of lost lover. So it makes you realize how the Eved has created such big, tremendous things just for the sake of the Jewish people, just for the sake of the tzaddikim. So there's a Levas and a Lod now. Again, based on what we said, it sounds like there are, so Marashah had explained earlier that there are, in fact, very large creatures in the sea that one, they might be the Levas. And now we have, for example, I mean, nowadays, if they have blue whales, for example, are known, are the biggest known creature. Maybe the blue whale is, if not the Leviathan itself, because the Gemara has talked about the Leviathan is much greater and bigger than that. But the, at any rate, that you do have, there are very big, great creatures that we don't even know about, and all of them are created for the sake of the Jewish people, for the sake of the Tzaddikim. In a similar vein, you know, I mean, talking...
That you say the Dav and Dav Mukhas.
Yeah, Taninim Uchol Taimus. Yeah, the same thing. Taninim would also be the Leviathan there, yeah. It could be Leviathan, it could be all the other creatures that we're familiar with in the depths, yeah. I mean, another way you can look at it, I mean, you know, in the same vein, I mean, you know, in modern science has found, you know, zillions of galaxies and stars and everything, billions of light years away and whatever, and it's the same kind of thing as what Marshall is saying over here. Like this, we would think, well, any of them is much bigger than the Earth. But nevertheless, we should realize, first of all, that the Eibishter created them, and second of all, it created them for our sake, as little as we are. Nevertheless, we, humanity in general, and the Jewish people in particular, are the purpose that for which all those galaxies and stars and gigantic creatures and whatnot were created. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. So Shoshan Purim Cotton, first of all, you have that the Pasuk says, Yichayenu miyemayim, Hashem will keep us alive during the 2 days, Vayem HaShlishi, and on the third day, Yikimenu, Hashem will lift us up, Yikimenu, V'nichya Lefanav, Hashem will raise us up, and we will live before Him. In Pasuk chapter, it refers to previous Golosin, and then the Gola Amitis Vashlema. So the Rebbe writes in a letter, that it also means nowadays we live in a world of mostly a Balei Asakim, of business people who are involved with Olam Hazeh. They act according to Torah. Namely, they do the Avodah of Zvulun. But Olam Haba is going to be really more for the Yoshva Oyhel, the Balei Torah, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, where they spend their time learning Torah, which is Shevet Yisachar. So that's Miyamayim. So you have an Avodah of Zvulun and you have an Avodah of Yisachar. By Yom HaShlishi represents that every time it's a combination of both types of avodah. The neshama and the guf both equally will work together with the same enthusiasm in avodas Hashem and will be like Adam Rishon before the Chet Tzedas, where there was no difference between the guf and the neshama. As we find that they didn't have to wear clothes because they recognize that the guf is just a lavush for the neshama. So that's by Yom HaShlishi. As far as Shushan Purim Tetzvav Adabez. When we reach Yemos Mashiach and we've completed our avodah of refining all the toiv from Ra, and again we reach the Shleimus of before the Chet Tzedas, at the beginning there will still exist Ra in the world, but in a way that the Ra is completely separated from the toiv. Then comes the world of Tchias HaMesim, then the Matzios of Ra will be completely removed as Ruach HaTomah Avim and Arex. Continuing with Halachas of Tzitzis. So we talked about that a garment of four or more corners is chayiv in tzitzis. If it has five, then you put it on the four furthest removed corners. Now, suppose that you have a garment that had four corners and you cut one of them on a diagonal. So now you have five corners. It's still chayiv in tzitzis. And the same thing, you cut two corners at a diagonal, then you have six corners. So therefore, so it's still going to be chayiv in tzitzis. Nonetheless, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that it's better not to make a garment more than four corners, because even though we were saying up until now that more than four corners is also chayiv in tzitzis, but the Sifri says differently and says that actually, and then also the Gemara brings opinions that more than four corners is in fact potter from tzitzis, so therefore best not to have a garment with more than four corners in the first place. As far as what you do, we'll talk about next time. That's the same is you can round a corner, as for example, is commonly done on kapotas, and then that's not an issue, but the rounding has to, we'll talk about how the rounding is to be done in such a way that the beggar will in fact be potter from tzitzis.